Earlier this month, a propaganda video from the so-called IS or Daesh appeared, featuring an Australian extremist known as Abu Adam, who urged other Australians to join the group's fight in the Philippines. Marawi, on the island of Mindanao in the southern Philippines, is now seen as an alternative destination, apparently, for foreign fighters, a serious worry for the entire region. And in terms of the immediate battle, our Australian P-3 Orion aircraft are helping the Philippine military with intelligence gathering over the region, as are apparently the US, which is causing some flurry of attention within the Philippines. But in terms of some sort of path forward when the immediate conflict ends, what to do to prevent the area from becoming a stronghold of extremism? My next guest here on Saturday Extra, Steve Rood, suggests that the revival of the peace accord between the Philippine government and the local Moro people is as important as the military efforts. And there's no doubt that President Duterte understands this elusive peace could change everything. For nearly a decade, Stephen Rood was involved in the International Contact Group. That was four states and four NGOs that attended the negotiations with the Moro Islamic Liberation Front. He was later involved in an international team chosen to assess the implementation of the agreement. So, good morning and welcome, Stephen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
First to that video that briefly surfaced of this man, Abu Adam. How serious is that message?
Well, it is echoing a message that came out in the middle of last year, where there was a Malaysian, an Indonesian, and a Filipino making exactly the same argument, that if you can't get to Syria or Iraq, then what you should do is go to the Philippines. And in particular, nowadays, they can specify Marawi. There seem to be a number of foreign fighters in Marawi, anywhere between 20 and 60, depending on the estimates you see. And so it's certainly a effort by ISIS to come to another region and to establish itself and to have an impact.
And I suppose you wonder how vulnerable Mindanao is to becoming a centre for IS and jihad, to replacing Syria. I mean, there's quite a lot of debate around this. People like Sidney Jones say that it is a game changer. Others, and a man called Peter Chalk, writing in The Strategist, says, no, let's not get too carried away with this.
Well, it's difficult to assess while the fighting is ongoing, but there is a long history of attempts by violent extremists going back to Jamaah Islamiyah out of Indonesia to utilize the southern Philippines both as a source of weapons for their own struggle, but also to go there and to join in. There are, for instance, thousands of legal Indonesians in Mindanao because it's so close, so that having a few foreign fighters from Indonesia or Malaysia would easily blend in. The question is whether the ideology will spread, not so much whether the people themselves will survive, because as people keep saying, you can't kill an idea by shooting people.
I mean, the island of Mindanao, and we've covered this quite a lot on Radio National, has for decades been the site of this independent struggle for the local Moro people, who are Muslims in predominantly the Christian Philippines. So what's your judgment? Might some local opposition groups see IS as a sort of flag of choice, as a tactic to advance their long-standing case?
I wouldn't put it that way. Rather, there are two competing narratives going on. There is the narrative of the peace process that the large organized fronts, the Moro Islamic Liberation Front and the Moro National Liberation Front, have been engaging in for decades and which have never quite come to full implementation. And then there is the growing, since 2014, narrative of the caliphate and giving people a particular flag to rally around, which does not really consider the southern Philippines as an entity in itself, but rather part of a larger worldwide struggle. And the way I argue is that the peace process itself should it be successful, may not convince the hardcore of the people who support ISIS, but will indeed help dry up their potential pool of recruits by showing that peaceful progress is possible.
Is another narrative. I notice, actually, in your piece, that very interesting work by the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, MILF itself, actually trying, if I'm reading you correctly, worrying about the extremism of IS and trying to actually cooperate with authorities to organise a less destructive end of the whole siege in Marawi.
Yes, indeed. There, under the peace agreements that have been reached, there are mechanisms for making sure that there aren't accidental encounters, and they use those mechanisms to get out of the way when the military is pursuing violent extremists. Similarly, they cooperated with the government to set up teams. They're called Joint Peace and Security Teams to preserve a corridor for civilians to flee in out of Marawi. So this kind of thing demonstrates that they themselves want to make sure that it's their effort and their narrative which finally provides successful progress for the Moros down in southern Philippines.
Yes, I think that a former mayor of Marawi, Datu Abul Kaya Alonto, a leader, warned residents of the dangers of signing up to IS. And in fact, some of the priests, I'm trying to think of the proper word, have also been very careful to point out to people that this is not the Islam that they favour.
That's right. The MILF head, the Darul Ifta, it's called, they issued a fatwa against violent extremism in during the Marawi event.
That's quite significant, isn't it?
It is. On the other hand, the violent extremists, the ISIS-inspired people, tend to push back very heavily. There was a gathering of ulama in May, and essentially the extremists warned ulama against going or there would be retaliation. And I know a particular ustaz who gave a Friday sermon against kidnapping, for instance, and the next day his mosque was strafed with automatic weapons fires as a warning.
But that's hugely problematic for I mean, that's a big risk for them as well, isn't it, to be tackling the local mosque for the IS?
Well, indeed, it's an illustration of the fact that sometimes the best advocates against violent extremism are people from within their community who can say that this is not, as you said, this is not the Islam we believe in, and that we need to have other ways of organizing our society and moving forward.
So maybe that is where, if we were ever asked to put, I mean, we're putting our money into providing Orion aircraft, and I think $20 million is going in, I think the Foreign Minister announced, but obviously that sort of support for the local more moderate Muslim leaders would be critical, wouldn't it?
It would, and actually, if you read the minister's statement carefully, she did include that kind of support for the peace process in it. It's not merely military and rehabilitation, but some of the broader aspects are being tackled by Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.
Stephen Rood is our guest. He's now a visiting fellow at the ANU after a decade of experience in the peace negotiations in the Philippines. So how important would you judge, Stephen, that attempt by President Duterte to revive the peace accord? I think he has a bill before Parliament, doesn't he?
That's right. It was introduced just this past week and there were hearings already. It's quite important. Part of the trouble, of course, is that the majority in the Parliament come from the rest of the country. And so they do not necessarily understand the problems and solutions from Mindanao. President Duterte, for all his other characteristics, is indeed from Mindanao. He does have a Moro grandmother. So he is very familiar with it and has a fair amount of political capital. It will remain unclear whether in the middle of this turmoil he can get this bill through Congress.
You think this is really the low-hanging fruit, don't you? Full implementation of agreements reached in 1996 with them. and in 2014 with the must be picked.
Exactly. I mean, part of the trouble with countering the narrative of ISIS that the peace process isn't working is the fact that we've been doing it for decades and haven't reached a final solution. So if we could finally get it done, it would be a big deal.
Look, I just also noticed that one of the most fertile sources of recruitment, you write, in Mindanao is among, and possibly elsewhere, is among people who have lost relatives in fighting already. So they're children of martyrs or other surviving family members.
That's true. I mean, part of the problem, for instance, with the long-running Abu Sayyaf group, which has been in existence for 25 years, is that the estimate for the number of them continues always to be 200 or 300. No matter how many are killed, then there are people who then have grievances. If somebody killed your cousin or your uncle, then you will be more likely to join in order to get revenge. So the actual physical elimination can often be quite problematic.
And just to finish, really, on what you just alluded to about Duterte trying to get things through the assembly, is it that a lot of Filipinos almost look at Mindanao and shudder and just say, that's got nothing to do with us. It'll never be solved. You know, banish it from my thoughts. Is that part of the trouble, that it's not seen as something that needs to be solved now?
It certainly is the fact that people tend to think of Mindanao as a faraway and dangerous place. Part of the job of a chief executive in the Philippine presidential system is to, you know, basically persuade people, okay, you may not care much one way or the other, but I want this to happen and you're giving me this popularity, so let's go ahead. He has to break through that indifference and begin to let people make sure that it's possible to see progress and possible to measure the difference in people's lives.
Mm. And it always sounded to me a bit like Chechnya, with loads of clans and people in the center saying they're irredeemable, leave them to it.
That's a very good way to put it.
Mm. Okay, well, let's hope that that man, who's hardly one that you can admire a lot, it can break through in some form. Thank you for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you for having me.
Stephen Rood, who's visiting fellow in the Department of Political and Social Change at the ANU and has been very closely involved in negotiations for many years to try to provide some form of change on Mindanao.